Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast by Opus Partners. I'm your host, Steve McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And tell us, we've got another case study Sunday, and we are so pleased to be joined all the way from San Francisco in the States by Joe. Joe, welcome along to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Joe, just give us a little bit of a background, because you've been all over the world but have started investing in New Zealand property. So what's your journey been like?
Yeah, for sure. So I was born and raised in Southwest Germany, basically by a middle-class family with a focus much on education rather than investing. I ended up studying business engineering and analytics, but always wanted to get out and see the world. And so I grabbed every opportunity. I've lived in Australia for a little bit, where I met my wife, who is a Kiwi, and that probably explains a large part of that motivation. And then we spent 6 years in the UK, and most recently, we now live in San Francisco.
That's really interesting where you said that your family really focused on education rather than investment. What do you kind of mean by that?
My dad and my mom grew up in a time with very high interest rates, and their mindset in Germany has always been the one inflation-proof asset that you can build is your own education. And so my dad has spent substantial amounts of time pursuing his PhD. He was the first in his family to do that. He's worked for the German government, most recently as a principal to a vocational school. And as such, education and working hard has always been the main focus in the family.
And so when you started investing, you were kind of the black sheep of the family then, with all these wild ideas of investing. Did you talk much to your parents about it?
Yeah. So for me, to be fair, that only started really during my university years, when I started meeting people, international folks with other mindsets. And luckily, we in our family, we have a very open relationship with everyone. So talking about things has never been an issue, even though I'd say finances haven't been a topic that my parents discussed with us boys growing up as much. But then as soon as I started showing interest, I learned it mostly or learned about it mostly from friends in college, and then shared my thoughts with my parents. They never said anything negative, but it just wasn't investing or entrepreneurship just wasn't really a big topic growing up for me.
And it's quite interesting. I think people, not to stereotype too much, but from your part of the world, tend to have a bit of a different mindset around investing. So at one of our seminars, I think it was late last year, I met a guy who was either German or from Northern Europe, who was saying, I'm really in a saving mindset and I've saved a lot of money. I want to invest, but how do I move from a saving mindset to an investing mindset? I'm not sure whether you've got any comments on that.
Yeah, I think that shift in, at least in Germany, from what I can observe, is as much a generational shift as it is a shift over your life. When you start projecting your life forward and you start thinking about what your goals are and what you want to reach, and you just identify a gap and you start looking into ways of closing that gap. And pretty quickly, you start reading about different ways of investing. And I think so generally, I would say my generation now in Germany is much more into investing. And you can see that in the statistics, how many younger people in Germany own ETFs, for example, or have an investment account to begin with. That's certainly grown.
And so you've met these other people from all walks of life overseas with different investor mindsets, and you think, I'm going to start investing myself. What does your investment journey look like?
For me, right out of university with the first job in the UK, there was a compulsory contribution to your retirement savings. And I think that's how it effectively started off, where the employer contributes a bit and you contribute a bit. And then it took a fair few years for me to accrue some amount of money that could be used for property purchases, right? I mean, I'm talking that took 5-6 years easy, because life gets away of you. And unless you make that deterministic goal to buy a property, which it's never been that for me to start with, it just takes a while. And once we've had some amount of money in the bank, we started thinking about, you know, what else could we do with this?
And what's really interesting is, although you've more recently invested in New Zealand property, it wasn't your first property purchase. So talk to us about what you bought first.
That's actually a very good example of the somewhat by chance nature of the whole thing. we had a phase in our life where we thought we would definitely move to Melbourne, Australia. And at the same time, we happened to have saved up a bit of money. And so we started thinking the done thing is to look at a property in Melbourne. And we ended up buying an apartment in central Melbourne, but unfortunately tried to combine too many goals into it, right? It was as much an emotional purchase as it was geared to be an investment, right? And so it's kind of fit into nothing really, but that was our first purchase. It hasn't harmed us, but it probably wasn't a great first investment choice. We also never ended up moving back to Australia, at least not so far.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I remember working with you and your wife on this exact asset and saying, you know, it's not the investment that you ought to be buying based on what you're looking to achieve. But there was that emotional aspect of, hey, we want to be in the Melbourne market because we might end up living there. And when people combine personal and investment, you end up compromising on the investment every time.
Yeah, we certainly have 100%. And I think it's really shaped how I now try to look at property investment and really separate that out because of that experience. That has been a teaching moment for us.
And Joe, when you're talking about, you know, it's not really an investment, it's not really an owner-occupier, you know, what are those sort of compromises that you've had to make, which mean that you ended up somewhere in the middle where it wasn't a good investment and wasn't a good own home?
For us, it was location, right? We said, if we are going to move to Melbourne, we want to live in a hip neighborhood. It ended up Fitzroy. We said, we don't want to move super far into the suburbs and commute in if we go there. And so what was available to us at the price point that we could afford, being foreign investors as well, happened to be apartments, right? And the specific apartment that we still own, in the 5 years that we own it, hasn't really increased in value. The rent hasn't really gone up that much. So overall, if you were to just compare this to a current high-yield account that you could have, it would probably be better.
And so how did you then end up investing in New Zealand?
So New Zealand for us has always been the mid to long-term goal. I promised my wife we would return to New Zealand eventually. I have since, and I'll admit to that, been pushing out the date. But I'm very firm on the promise itself, if she listens to this episode. And so for that main reason, we said, if we're going to end up in this country again, and we really enjoy it, let's start building for that. That was the main reason.
And being an overseas investor has a lot more challenges when it comes to actually getting the money from the bank. How have you guys found that process as far as borrowing money from a New Zealand bank while you're earning money overseas?
So for our New Zealand purchase, the recent one, it hasn't been super hard overall. But there is a lot more scrutiny and explanations that are needed towards the banks to explain how the income is structured, various deductions. There is a bunch of shading that's going on that maybe entrepreneurs might relate to a bit more that we had to deal with, of course. And so that has just lengthened the process and introduced somewhat a bit of a psychological burden, if you will, right? If you get a finance pre-approval for a set amount of time, and then you have to go for reapproval, but you don't know if the banks have changed how they look at internationals in the meantime, that can be somewhat daunting. We haven't had an issue, but I've thought about it a lot.
And just to dig into those deductions, for example, the explanations around your income, is your income quite complex that the bank has to take things off like overtime or bonuses? Or what do you mean by that, Joe?
It is complex in the sense that US compensation generally, or some countries, have a different structure to how they compensate employees through, for example, through company stock. Right. So employees will get a fair chunk of company stock as part of their total compensation. And that is hard, almost impossible to get recognized, for example. At the same time, the contributions to your superannuation are much more flexible. I can change them at any point in time. They're not required at all. And paychecks have other contributions that allow for tax benefits that don't exist in New Zealand at all. The US famously has one of the most complex tax codes ever through lobbying. And so it can get very awkward to explain single line items to the bank and assure them that they are not recurring or that they can be stopped.
And you've worked as an overseas borrower with both Australian and New Zealand banks. How would you compare the two? Which is better, Australian banks or New Zealand banks to work with when you're an overseas buyer?
I will say the New Zealand banks are the most holistic banks that I have encountered. My personal struggle with the Australian banks has been that I don't hold a permanent residency in Australia. So it's very hard for me to talk to them in general. I would say that US banks are very US centered and New Zealand banks are very internationally focused. They will ask for everything, right? And you shouldn't omit anything. So that makes it very lengthy, right? Whereas the US banks tend to take your credit score and credit assessment that is largely based on the US itself, ignore most of the international situation and provide their assessment based on that.
And do you use a mortgage broker in each of those different countries?
Yeah, we have tried ourselves and stopped doing that. Definitely use a mortgage broker.
Why do you stop doing it, Joe?
In Australia specifically, we never tried without a mortgage broker in New Zealand, but in Australia we tried. And it just seems to me that the relationships brokers can build over time with employees in the banks are much more powerful than what I could ever build part-time after work, right? Because when I call a number, I end up in a call center and I hardly ever make it to the person who actually makes the decision. Whereas I feel from my experience, it definitely felt a lot more that mortgage brokers have more direct access and an opportunity to pitch your case rather than just sharing the numbers.
I think that's a pretty fair assessment.
And Joe, when you decided, okay, I'm going to invest in New Zealand so that we're fulfilling that long-term goal of being here, how did your time getting into the market?
A large part of it is also when you have saved enough money for a down payment, conceivably. But I have a background in quantitative methods and data generally and started listening to your podcast. And I don't want to give too many compliments to Ed on the show, but certainly listening to the podcast and reading up on the data that Ed has put out made me or convinced me that the Auckland market has hit a low point in late 2022. And that's pretty much when I started reaching out and Andrew, we started talking about a potential investment. And that's what really, I had a bit of FOMO for better or worse, and I wanted to get in at that point.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's terrible timing. Think late 2022, Auckland market bottomed out officially, kind of May 2023. I mean, for each individual property, it's a bit different, isn't it? But as a whole market, kind of early to mid-2023. So it sounds like you got the timing, you know, roughly about right. And in terms of what you ended up buying, what did you invest in the end?
Yeah, so this time, I really wanted to hold myself to different standards in the sense that I wanted to park all of my personal preferences for immediate location or the type of home on the side and look at it truly from an investment perspective. We ended up buying a 3-bed, 2-bath, including a garage, new built townhouse on the North Shore in Auckland. And that was, as I said, largely driven by factors that are more quantifiable, more objectively quantifiable than what we pursued in Australia.
What were some of those quantitative factors?
So specifically, I looked at demographics in the area. I think homes.co has a demographics sheet. Also, a lot of it driven by the ownership to renters ratio in that specific neighborhood, proximity to town and public transport, and probably a bit weird, but elevation. I was very inclined to look for something that's on a hill. Specifically.
And why was that?
Being international, it's hard for me to stay fully in tune with all the latest news. But I had, of course, heard about floodings very recently at the time. And so I had looked extensively at the flood maps and the floodplains. And so maybe that shouldn't have been such a big factor, but it turned out to be a bigger consideration for me at the time.
I remember.
And the renter to ownership ratio is an interesting one. So why was that important to you and what were you looking for?
Yeah, so I believed and still believe that in terms of any capital upswing, a higher renters ratio indicates more investment in an area to me, right? Because someone has to own the building and rent it out. So those are usually investors. And more permanent upswings are usually or tend to be driven by ownership increase, not by investor increase, right? Fluctuation can happen from a lot of investors driving into an area and then having to roll over property or wanting to roll over property potentially. Whereas the long lasting effects and sort of the sustainable increase in value often comes from a lasting change or drive in home ownership in an area.
And Joe, what's this investing all for? What does it look like in 10 years for you?
I thought about that a lot. I mean, ultimately, it's about freeing up time, right? We have a very scattered family across the globe. My parents live in Germany. My wife's parents live in New Zealand. And that has taken a lot of logistical effort for us to ensure that we can see both parts of the family, mostly time, right? That's a big driver, and hoping to de-stress that situation for us and make it and free up time. The other big part is a potential transition out of big corporate jobs. My wife and I both work in corporate jobs, and we've always dabbled or envisioned what life might be like working not for a big corporate. So again, freedom of choice.
And just before we wrap up, Joe, what would be your advice to other listeners of the show, especially if they're listening from overseas and are interested in the New Zealand market?
I cannot understress the financing aspect of any real estate purchase. I mean, that's even true for locals, but I think even more so for internationals. Two main things. It's really important to know where you stand with borrowing and specifically servicing as an international resident. And then that just to build up and understand what you might be able to afford. And then once you start buying property, ensuring that you have buffers and checks in place for when things take a turn for the worse, right? So for me, these are simple rules of no cross-collateralization, borrowing conservatively, right? And also one last thing to throw in, just to learn about the concept of risk-adjusted returns, right? Wherever there are very high returns, there's also usually volatility involved. And so we have steered away from the high return, potential high volatility assets for that reason.
Fantastic. Well, Joe, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it, especially I think this is one of the first international guests we've had in a little while. We've had a couple on the show, but it's great to have overseas listeners on because this is an international property investment community we're building. And for anybody else listening who wants to come on, we'd love to have you to hear your stories. Just flick me an email, edit@opuspartners.co.nz. Right, let's wrap it up there, but please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to the show. It really does help us get the message out to more people. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Steve McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
We're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.